Hi, thanks for tuning into this podcast celebrating South Asian Heritage Month. I'm Bridie and I'm joined today with co-host Manifa. We both work at Apple Yard Lees. The theme chosen by public selection this year is Stories to Tell and reflects the collective desire to amplify diverse narratives and experiences. The aim this month is to empower individuals from Afghanistan, Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, the Maldives, Nepal, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka to share their stories and promote their events. IP&Me is a community under the umbrella IP Inclusive Group. IP&Me focuses on ethnic minorities in the realm of intellectual property, be that trainees, attorneys, support staff, paralegals, or partners. We want to highlight some of those narratives and experiences within the IP industry by inviting people of South Asian heritage to interview. Today we are speaking with Leanne, who works at Foresters down in London.
Hi, yes, I'm Leanne. I'm a trainee patent attorney at Foresters. So I work in the London office in the tech and engineering team. So I joined about 2 years ago, so in September 2021, taking my foundation exams at the moment to become UK qualified.
Cool. Okay. So can I ask you to tell us about your South Asian heritage? Like, where are your roots in South Asia?
So my parents are both originally from India. And they're both from Goa in India. So my surname is Portuguese. Lots of people get thrown off by it, but Goa used to be a Portuguese colony. So that's where I got my surname Da Cunha from. And yeah, my mum grew up in India, in Mumbai. And my dad actually, although his parents grew up in India, he grew up in Mombasa and then moved here when he was a kid. So all around the world, but I was born and brought up here in the UK.
That is really interesting. It sort of brings me to this question I have about whether you perceive there to be a difference between culture and heritage.
I think there definitely is, for me, a difference between my culture and my heritage. I think being born and brought up in the UK, my first thought is to say I'm British. And yeah, India is my heritage. I have a lot of appreciation for it. We have lots of Indian food and I visit my family in India, but I definitely see it as two different things. And sometimes you wonder, which one do I have to put myself into a category? I think it's weird when you're brought up in the UK.
No, I mean, I would agree as well. I feel like your culture is sort of informed by your experience as well. And like, heritage can sometimes be very specific, where culture leaves a bit of space to be defined, like, as you go through life.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was also brought up here, so I can relate to you on that one. Along with heritage and culture, religion also, you know, combines into all of these bits that we're celebrating this month. So would you describe yourself as a religious person at all?
I would say, yeah, I'm religious. I'm Catholic. So I was brought up Catholic and I'm still practicing it. I'd say my religion is separate to work, maybe not intentionally at all, but it's not one that requires that you need to practice during the day as such. And I've always associated like with my family, and it's never, I guess, come up, but I'm always happy to share that I am Catholic. And I think that's why it's nice doing these kind of interviews, where it gives you an opportunity to talk about it.
So South Asian Heritage Month was established in the UK in only 2018, which is quite recent, and it represents deepening people's understanding of the rich and diverse contributions of South Asian communities to British society. I wondered if you'd heard of South Asian Heritage Month before. I hope that's not too patronising, but you know, it's fairly new, and like what it means to you.
I'd never heard of it before, actually, and it was, yeah, interesting to read up that it started only in 2018, so it's a fairly new celebration. I've not been aware of it before.
I guess another question that follows from that is, sometimes when companies and organizations are trying to celebrate underrepresented demographics, they can end up being a little bit performative. Is there a certain kind of celebrations or certain kinds of acknowledgement that you would like to see as part of South Asian Heritage Month?
I think, similar to how we're having this talk, and you're going to be talking to different people from South Asia, I think, like I said before, it's a good opportunity to more informally talk about different cultures, and it doesn't feel like it's performative. I think everyone can get something from it. In IP related events, I'd be interesting. I don't know about any, you know, South Asian inventors who've come up with breakthrough inventions. I thought that would make I'll read up about that.
Oh, that could actually be very good.
Yeah, a very good idea.
I think even if companies are, it can be classified as performative, I think still raising some awareness is better than nothing. If people can learn something about South Asia and like learning the like different cultures within different countries within South Asia, I think that can only be a good outcome.
Yeah, there's always something to be gained, I think. I agree. I would agree with that. I thought it might be interesting to ask about your experience of like inclusion in academia versus like being in the working world. And like, I guess, yeah, South Asian Heritage Month is relatively new, but have you felt, you know, in like, yeah, included by diversity efforts before?
I think if I first think about when we were in academia, so at university, so I studied engineering, and I'd say it was very diverse. If anything, there were probably more, it's probably more Asian dominated. In that sense, it was being a woman in engineering was like the bigger minority there. And now working in IP, I think the same applies really. It's not something I've ever consciously thought, I'm in the minority here and it affects my work. And I guess that's quite nice about the job that I'm part of the equality and diversity group at Foresters. And again, similar to how you're doing now, we try and raise awareness and make sure it's welcoming to everyone.
When you applied for the role, did you look up to any like South Asian people already in the field? Because I found it interesting when I was applying that you could see Fiona's like faces and names. And so you sort of got an indication of maybe where they might be from. Did you have a similar sort of experience when you were looking for jobs?
I definitely didn't know anyone personally that I could actually talk to who are South Asian in this job. I think it's anyway such a niche job, so knowing anyone is a good step. But I definitely did look up websites and see the people's page, and yeah, it's definitely helpful seeing the pictures of people and putting a name to a face. I think it does, even if it's subconsciously, it does affect your view of the profession. I think if you only saw men compared to it was like men and women or a whole diverse culture, you do ask yourself like, can I see myself there fitting in? So there was no one personally in particular that I had, but yeah, maybe hopefully I can be that for someone one day.
Okay, so what do you love most about your job?
I think definitely what I like a lot about the job is just the range of technologies that you get to deal with. And I like that you're not just focused on one for months. Like it's not one big project and you only work on that one thing. I like the turnaround, and you might work on multiple cases in one day. So I like just reading up about new technologies. Just feels like you're always expanding your knowledge in different areas. So I did engineering and manufacturing engineering is what I specialised in at uni, but now I'm doing lots of things with like chromatography and things I wouldn't have considered before, like breathing masks and autonomous vehicles. It's all about finding that difference between prior arts, that's like inventions or something that was known before you filed your patent, and arguing the difference between that one and yours. And it involves a lot of reading, so reading what's out there already. The examiner will cite some prior art, and it might involve going back and forth between the client to work out what is of value to them, like what features are of value, and focusing on that. And I don't think it's ever a one-size-fits-all argument. You really have to tailor it depending on what objections you get from the examiner. So I think the range and the speed, or the turnover of how you go through work is what keeps it interesting.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that I found quite surprising too. I thought, you know, it would be a desk job and be quite similar, but it's really not. Like the turnover of the different cases that you get to do is very enjoyable.
I think it's like quite different in that sense to in-house, as in like an IP team in-house, where I think you tend to deal with like one set of technology or one field, but then you get to see it all through, maybe it's from like conception to market and you help that process, whereas in private it's maybe you don't see that much, you don't work as much with the inventors directly, but then you get to work with a lot of different technologies and lots of fields. So I guess it depends what people like. What I found about this job, it's there's a lot of independent work, which I think works to my strengths. So it's up to you to organize your day and your deadlines, and then you take the initiative to like go to the partner you work under, whoever it is, and say, this is what I'm stuck on, or can we go over this? I think that works for me. And there's not, it's not just a day full of lots of meetings, that you do have time to just sit down and focus on your work, which is something I really like about this job. And then at the end of the day, I'll maybe meet up with some friends, or I like to play the piano. I find that really relaxing. So I'll go home and often I'll be there. I definitely sit at the piano before I will put on my exercise clothes. I find that's always been a great way for me to relax.
Yeah, I can see on your LinkedIn that you've got loads of music experience. Like, is the piano, I imagine you do play more instruments than the piano, sorry, I can't remember specifically, right?
Yeah, yeah. I sing as well, but I'm still, looking for a choir to join. I've joined one or two, but not found that right one yet in London. I think you don't realise at school or uni how much opportunity there is, and so how easy it is to just join a choir. But yeah, I sing and then play piano, and I used to play the clarinet, but not anymore.
I used to play the clarinet.
I always wanted to, saxophone was the one I wanted to play, but then I remember, that's how everyone starts, I think, but then all the teachers always say, start with clarinet and then move on, but that never happens.
What is something that you are most surprised about your role as a trainee?
Something I'm most surprised about in the role is probably the responsibility you get as a trainee. So it takes about maybe 4 years to become qualified, 4 to 5 years. And I didn't think I would be able to help with drafting at this stage, but I did feel like from day one, I was able to help with the same work I'm doing now. It's always, you're allowed to get stuck in and help. So I think that was something I didn't expect.
It's right, the responsibility, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess coming from like straight from uni, you're used to sort of like demonstrating your knowledge at the point at which you've studied for a few months, at least like this particular module, which is quite different to like getting in the door and just like doing, like producing a work product. So,
yeah, actually that reminds me, I think also it's a lot of on the job training. I think I had thought before it would be more formal training, but the majority is you almost learn from your mistakes. You try and draft a response, and when you go over it, you'll learn what you could do better next time, how to change your wording. And it's a lot of back and forth. But that you do learn really quickly, and it's quite surprising how quickly you learn to like argue a case well and like read a pattern spec quickly. So yeah, I think the on the job training was something that I didn't expect, but it's been the most useful.
What is one tip that's stuck in your mind ever since you started in the IP profession? I think mine would be, so as a trainee, we don't have clients yet, but technically your clients are the fee earners that you're working under. So if you treat those fee earners like a client, you know, you're putting yourself in good stead for the future when you eventually get some real clients.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh,
thanks,
Rudy. I've gone completely blank.
No problem.
Oh, my one's a weird one. It's just on holidays when you're on. I found this whole idea of like requesting holidays and stuff, now that you're a real adult working person and you don't just have like non-term time, when you do your out of office response, I think it's better. I've been told it's better to say that you're on annual leave rather than that you're on holiday, because it might confuse a client as to whether it's a national holiday or not. Oh. So that's a little tip. Not as handy, I think, but
useful. Okay. Useful still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think maybe this is a bit generic, but I think definitely a lot of people say to, if you're stuck on something, you know, leave it for a few days to mull over, and I think that that always worked. Your subconscious is somehow still working it out. And I've definitely had times where I've said I can't think of what to do, and I've just come back to it the next day, or if it's been a Friday, come back on Monday, and just looking at it again with fresh eyes, and rather than starting from where you left off, just do it as if you were starting again. And sometimes you just go down a completely different path, and you had all the facts already, you'd already figured it out, but just thinking of it in a different way can help.
Can I ask, like, did you have any indication that you might be interested in careers in law like when you were younger, or is it only like once you heard about the patent attorney profession that you thought, oh, this could be interesting?
I didn't at all consider law before I found out about this profession, which was in my last year of uni, so like very, I guess, late in at university. I always knew I wanted to do something sciencey always, and then doing engineering at uni, I couldn't see myself really becoming an engineer, but then I wanted to use my degree somehow. And I think it happened, I think there was a job opening for a patent attorney. It was on GradCracker, the job website, and you can put in your degree. And so I said I did manufacturing engineering, and it came up, and I thought it was like a bug in the system, because I was like, oh, attorney, like what? This doesn't seem at all related. And that's when I clicked on that, and that's when I read up, and you need a STEM degree to become a patent attorney. And then the more I read about it, the more it sounded kind of exactly what I was looking for. So I think that's another tip, is to just keep an open mind, because I don't think I would have come across this career or thought I was able of doing it if I hadn't kept an open mind. And I think some of the things that you need to become a patent attorney, like being quite detail oriented and paying that attention to detail, and bit, like I said before, the independent work, you need to be able to work on your own and manage your own time. I think those are the things I was looking for in a job, and I was just happy when I came across this role.
Yeah, it's a good mash between science and English style. Yeah.
No, it is. Quite like the problem solving aspect as well. I would say on paper, it didn't actually sound as interesting as it did when I got to an open day. Mm-hmm. And then we were engaging in like problem solving, and I realized, oh yeah, this is actually quite cool. Here's how I might approach it. And I like that that keeps you on your toes. And that's the thing, yeah, like you said, with putting something down over a few days, coming back to it and finding a new way to approach things is quite refreshing, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of like there's no right answer as well, I suppose, if you can support it with a lot of evidence and, you know, build your arguments that way. Yeah, like it's quite good in that sense.
Yeah, that's something I didn't expect. Like I wasn't used to that there isn't a right answer, that you can, if you can back it up, that you there's different avenues you can go down. And I think maybe before doing engineering, it's quite black and white, so that was a new way of thinking
outside. Like, we've done advice related to work. Is there any advice that you've received outside of work that's really stuck with you?
I think the best bit of advice, and I've touched on this already, is keeping an open mind. I think it applies to work and outside, so maybe in terms of your hobbies or trying something new. If you want to say how you had said that people move to London or maybe a different city based on their job role, and you're trying to meet new people, I think having an open mind and going to new things is, I think having an open mind and like meeting people through different new opportunities that you might have not even considered before, it's probably some good advice I've been given.
I think, because I think sometimes when we're younger, people make things seem very black and white, and if you're open-minded and you like take opportunity where you see it, you get a really like full and rich experience of life. Yeah, so I think it's good for your career, it's good for your well-being, like taking care to be open-minded is like a good challenge. Cool. And like jumping all the way back to culture, I'm sure there are a number of things, but what is something in your culture that you are proud of?
Something I'm in my culture I'm proud of is definitely, it has to be Indian food. I think it's just, where would I be without it? I think I've been brought up having those strong family values, and we'd always sit around the table and have dinner together, and I think the food was a big part of that. I'm currently working my way through the Disham recipe book, so I'd recommend that for anyone wanting to try their hand at good Indian food.
What's your favourite Indian dish?
Oh, that's difficult. Oh, let me think about this. I think my favourite Indian food would actually be Indian sweets. My favourite. There's one called rasmalai, which mm-hmm. I think would be perfect for when this weather, when it gets hot. It's very cooling, and yeah, I have a sweet tooth, so it would definitely have to be Indian sweet.
Oh, what is rasmalai? I have never tried it. I'm not sure I know what it is.
It's, I don't actually know what it's like made out of, but it's almost like a spongy, not like cake, but like sponge. Yeah, do you know? And it's like soaked in a lot of like a milk, like with sugar and like cardamom. You have it cold. I don't know if that's the best description of it.
I think it's just, it's made out of like milk powder and different flours, but left to soak in milk. So it's very soft and, like Leanne said, a cake in milk, basically.
and you have like,
sweet.
Yeah, very sweet. And you have like pistachios and different nuts as well. Yeah, it's a good one.
I feel like the best sweets are the ones that are hardest to describe.
Yeah, that's so true, much yeah.
Sound good.
It's always funny hearing the, like when you go to an Indian restaurant and they're explaining a dessert in like an English way, and you're just like, I'm not sure. is that the way? It's funny.
Oh, that also makes me really interested to ask, like, do you speak a different language at home compared, like, do you speak English at home or do you speak another language at home?
I speak English at home. I sadly don't know any other languages. It was actually both my parents' first language as well. They were brought up speaking English as well. I guess maybe it's because being in a Catholic community, I think most people do tend to speak English. Like, even my grandparents who live in Mumbai, their first language is English too.
That's good.
Do you feel that you bring your full self to work? Like, or do you feel like there are aspects that are home and aspects that are work? And I guess you talked about your religion being something you heavily associate with family and stuff. So maybe you do have that experience.
Yeah, that's actually quite an interesting question. I can try and give an answer. I think between my experiences at uni compared to now at work are very different. I'd say at uni, I was bringing my full true self. Oh, my friends all knew that because you're living there as well. So they see the full you. I would go to church on Sundays. And so, yeah, but there was nothing I would, not that I intentionally hide it now, but then it just much more easily becomes, it's more open at uni. I'd say at work now, as my religion doesn't affect my work, or I'm not required to practice or like pray during the day, it's not something that comes up in a usual conversation. I think with some other trainees, when I told them, and they were surprised, just because, as you would be if you've never mentioned it before, and they said, not because we don't think it fits with you or anything, it's just, I feel there seem to be fewer people, I guess, our age actively practicing. Yeah, I don't really know that many people practicing Catholicism my age, so it's always, it's a fun thing, it's a nice thing to be able to share. But yeah, I think, I guess in that sense, you're not bringing your full self to work. It's interesting though.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that could, like, you could well describe that as bringing your full self to work. And you're right, it's like work is Monday to Friday between the hours of 9 and 5, and your previous experiences of like interacting with people you study with is just like every day, all the time, isn't it? Like, student life is very free flowing, so you get a different insight into people's lives than you do at work. I guess that's why it's good to have things like this where we can, like, yeah, just say, this is who I am, that, like, these parts of me, and like make a bit of a space for it as part of like your like workspace. So yeah, thank you very much again for sharing with us, and we hope you've had a good time.
Yeah, no, it's been good to chat. So thanks for asking for me to do it.